I think I'll read some small little poems. There's a marvelous poet who was a Japanese poet, whose name is Isa, who lived at the time of Wordsworth. And Isa wrote poems mainly that were haikus. Haikus are beginning to be written now in the United States for the first time. And it's a marvelous thing, because most of the emotions that we have are very short and swift. And that's the advantage of a haiku. It's only three lines long. It's only 17 syllables long. But the Japanese poets don't have to have an emotion as long as a sonnet, as long as Paradise Lost. They can have tiny emotions and make poems out of those. But in the United States, where we respect Paradise Lost and all of that sort of thing, when I was in college, I had the impression that the way they judge poems is by their length. You just measure them. And an important poem, you know, was, a poem was at least 14 lines long, wasn't that? Was it a poem? And a significant poem was at least 70 lines long. An important poem would be 200 or 300 lines long. A great poem, at least 500. It couldn't be less than 500. So the Japanese don't think about that way at all. Isa wrote nothing, really, but these small little poems, and they're considered all to be great. One of his little poems that I love the best was, he was wandering around one day in his little house, a very poor man, with no maids to come and clean up, and his bed was full of fleas and things of that nature. As Jonathan Winter says, crocodiles and things of that nature. And he saw a cricket in there, and he was going to go to sleep. He wrote this little poem, "Cricket, be careful, I'm rolling over." And everybody laughs when you read a haiku, and even the Japanese laugh. But one of the reasons you laugh is that it's a little funny, but also you laugh out of astonishment that how much unselfishness was in Isa to make him think of the cricket that way. It's this little shoot of unselfishness coming out from him, like a light ray that's so surprising. And another time, he had some fleas in his bed one night, and he wrote another little poem to them. "Fleas, oh yes, for you too, the night is probably just as long and long." And he saw one time, oh yes, his poem about the flies is marvelous. "Don't kill the fly, don't you see him there, wringing his hands, wringing his feet?" So how many people, how many poets have seen a fly washing his hands with those little black feet? And no one ever thought that he was begging for mercy until Isa came along. So, and he had another wonderful poem. It goes like this: "One human being, one fly in the large sitting room." That's got a little punch too. Because what he is saying, you know, people say, "Don't you believe in the dignity of man?" And he is saying, yes, of course, the man, human beings are very important, just as important as a fly. Flies are not unimportant either, just as important as a human being. So therefore, if you have a fly and a human being in the room, there's two. And this is not really unusual, or rather, we can't say it that way. We have to say that he used his poems to express ideas. He was a devout Buddhist. And for a Buddhist, all creatures are divine. They're not to be killed because there is something in them. Gary Snyder and I gave a reading at Houston a few days ago for a bunch of 6,000 English teachers, to be exact. And then we gave a benefit reading in El Paso two nights ago, which was a very sweet thing for the Committee for the Advancement of Culture in El Paso. We had We had an abandoned Baptist church, it had a marvelous feeling about it, exactly like an old fundamentalist services of the 1890s. And Gary Snyder himself is a devout Buddhist, as he said was. And so it took on more of that tone because Gary Snyder began to talk about what Buddhism meant in these things. And he started to tell, he lives in Japan in a Zen monastery, or participates in the work of a Zen monastery. And of course, they asked him questions. And so he was saying one of the questions that you asked to answer is this: does the dog have a Buddha nature? And of course, the answer is no! Anyway, so and that says the same thing. You think you're very different than the dog, do you? But imagine how English poetry would express this. When he's saying, one human being, one fly in a large sitting room. How would Pope say it? He'd go on and on and on. A proper study of mankind is man. When I was, so on. They express things by direct statement, by throwing out the words as a newspaper does. And it took a lot of them, to express it. But notice what Issa says. He just presents a single tiny picture. One human being, one fly in a large sitting room. And he doesn't waste all of those words. And he's got something that you'll never forget to sign. I've forgotten everything of Pope except that one line, which I profoundly hate. The proper study of mankind is man. The proper study of mankind is not man. Anyway. So Henry, here's a couple other poems of his. He loved to write poems for frogs and all sorts of animals. One day he was walking through the woods, and he saw frogs leaping around on all sides. You've all seen them, and they jump like this. And so he said, leaping for the river, the frog said, excuse me for going first. Well, that's a very polite Japanese frog. But he had another wonderful poem. He saw two frogs fighting, a skinny frog and a fat frog. And Esau was very poor and very skinny. And he associated himself with the thin frog. And so he wrote this poem, lanky frog, hold your ground. Issa is coming. So, don't tell me that he is not a great poet. And some of his other poems were a little different. One time he saw a line of black ants in the ground and he said, this line of black ants, maybe it goes all the way back to that white cloud. That's a little different. Because the purpose of Pope is to tell you what you already know. The proper study of mankind is man. Everybody has said that for 100 years before Pope said it. That's called the secularization of Western culture. And maybe you wouldn't express it quite that way. Maybe you'd take a paragraph. Pope only took a line. But what Issa is trying to get you to think is thoughts you've never thought before. So he said, what this poem suggests is possibly there is a connection between the black ant and the white cloud. Maybe there isn't any difference between earth and heaven. Maybe there's no difference between black and white. So I think it must be fine. Anyway, that's the purpose of the poem, is to nudge you towards little thoughts that you haven't thought before.